Shopperinos, you're listening to not a podcast, a fun cast with Chris Brang and Dave Ruka. Hey, Chris, what's going on?
That's good, man. Welcome to Morning Radio.
All right. I need a new name, like the Squanch. It's Chris and the Squanch. Chris and the Squanch. What's up, Chris?
Oh, God. That's only if we wanted to make money, because reality TV, boy, it makes it.
Oh, buddy. Yeah. I mean, we could do a real Developers of Bend, Oregon.
Good thing we don't have to go around looking for drama, because it's so easy to find in this industry. It's just surprising in a way, you know, the browser snooping in. We just had Eric on last week, and it was, you know, I guess at the time I was just like, whoa, we're just talking about browsers, only to find it to be a little catnippy for the people who, you know.
We got some hot browser DMs, and we are talking with people to get them on the show, so that'll all work out. But I think the idea was, you know, Chrome was redoing the engine, the layout NG, I think, and then I think Jen Simmons called it layout not good was what she heard. It was called, which is funny, but I think it actually stands for next gen layout, next gen, and it sounds like that work has been going on. I don't know if you saw that like grid broke recently. Did you get hit by the grid bug in Chrome?
No, you know what? The only reason I'm aware of it is because I saw some people making demo pens demonstrating the issue.
Well, and I've had grid break on me like that before, but apparently something else, like any. It used to kind of force content, but now it was like any content, it was like, instead of like min width zero or whatever, or min content, it was max content or auto or something was the value, which caught people by surprise. It caught me by surprise too. A lot of my sites were like, oh, that used to work. Now it's weird. Apparently that has been fixed, but I wonder if that was all connected to this layout NG. I don't know, but it seems like some big layout fixes are happening under the hood.
Like that happens on web apps all the time. I mean, hate to say it, but I push bugs, on the regular to production. Yeah. But browsers tend not to, in my experience, you know, like it once in a while, of course, but it's a little more rare for an actual browser to just straight up break something. I mean, obviously they have to take it a little more seriously because they're not supporting one website. They're supporting millions or billions of websites.
Yeah. And people were upset. I mean, but maybe that's the thing is it was such a surprise. Like you don't encounter browser breaking bugs that often. It was such a surprise to people. I found that interesting. Chrome 80 came out. That was a part of Chrome 80, that bug. Chrome 80 came out and it has a bunch of stuff in it, man. I didn't realize what was going on, but it has a bunch of stuff. It has like a contact picker API. So like you can get, I think we were talking about stuff like that. Like
for the first time in a while, I actually did dig into what the releases were in Chrome 80, and they're good. I mean, I guess what struck me about the release was that contact picker API, you know, interesting. I didn't really know that it was coming. I don't have any horse in that race, but I like it, you know, because I feel like the point of it is make it easier for users to fill out forms. Mm-hmm. If there's a form that has an address in it, you might as well be able to pick a contact. That's way quicker. I do that anyway because I have one password, but that's a good example of something that should make its way into the browser if it's obvious that people are augmenting the browser to do that. Mm-hmm. So I like it, but I'm just like, oh, wow, crazy. Then there's a bunch of like JavaScript stuff that lands, you know, there's some CSS stuff that lands. There's like service worker-y kind of cache stuff that lands. There's, there was something about their new way of handling feature flags, which aren't just like ways that you enable it like from some website. So you're like officially enabling this flag with their attention. It's not something you flip on locally.
Yeah, it's like you're part of an origin trial. Like you register your website or whatever with some key, and that unlocks the feature. So and maybe that's part of like you don't have to get every single user to open up a
feature flag with tracking.
Yeah,
great
feature flag.
But it seems fine. It seems like good stuff has come from it already. Maybe even that contact picker thing. Maybe that was one of the like the graduates from that program. I can't remember.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of this Fugu stuff is in origin trial, and sort of the, like, there's another one where, like, you have access to the file system, like, directly for, like, you know, you can, like, file read, but you can't really file write, right? Like, to that operating system. And so I think there's an origin.
So the first thing that you go through any developer's mind is like, what? No. But you then you look and you better hope that the first paragraph explainer of that thing is talking about security, because what the heck, you know?
Right. I mean, could you imagine just whatever? Yeah. Like you open up a website and it's like, great, CNN just added an icon to your homepage. It'd be, or your desktop.
No,
it'd be like, solid no.
Oh, yeah, that, or like, I have some like tax documents sitting on my desktop right now, and I just kind of assume that they're safe, you know?
Yeah.
Search, especially from a website.
Search entire hard drive for taxes. So.
I have a weird level of trust about that stuff, though. Like, I would assume that any browser coming anywhere near touching some functionality like that has thought about it to the point where I'm not digging into explainers, because I just assume they're going to do a good job with it. That's probably stupid of me, but that's kind of where my brain goes.
Well, yeah, that goes back to the trust of browser stuff, right? Like, you just trust, sort of inherently trust that they have. They know what they're doing. I think Sam Richard Snugug on the Twitters, he did a he's a Google Chrome OS DevRel, I think is his new job title. But he had a demo of it's an origin trial, but where a Markdown app could write to a Markdown file on your hard drive and stuff like that. So like you sort of see like the maybe like take some of the stuff that Electron does and make it more native to the platform. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Doesn't it feel like the vibe of a lot of this stuff is still like the web needs the capabilities that other things have, because we're still like scrappy on the web. Like, we still need to win. We still need to, like, the enemy is anything that isn't the web as a way to build an app. Which I don't hate that. I think that's probably like a good position for the web to be in.
Yeah, I'm in the like the web can be unique. Like, we don't need to, like, you know, you look at like notifications. Oh God, we gotta have notifications. Apps have notifications, and then lo and behold, 99% of all users say no thank you to notifications. Chrome just released a little UX Chrome UX report. That showed like 41% of people just say no right out of the gate on mobile, and even more say it on desktop, or they'll just ignore it. I think that's the UX on mobile, is like you have to like such limited screen, you have to dismiss or interact. You can't just ignore that little badge that pops up. But I don't know. So there's stuff coming, like badging API, like a little icon on your progressive web app. The contact picker's out. The install related apps, which is kind of weird. But, you know, I imagine if you were like, if you had the Microsoft Word progressive web app, you might want to be like, hey, also install PowerPoint and Excel, you know. Native file system API, what we talked about. The shape detection API, which I think is sort of like a, like for cameras and optical character recognition, you know, like basically AI or whatever in the inside the cameras and stuff like that, face detection, etc. Face barcode, all that. So that could unlock point of sale software, content indexing. That's like maybe when you save a file, and this is actually in beta or origin trial, I think too, or a flag. You like save your content like a web page from my progressive web app. There's maybe like a UI where it can show up later. Like, oh, you saved this file or this is already downloaded on your device.
Metadata one? Yeah, I get it. It's because I think it's like, even on DaveRupert.com, if you were like, I'm going to save these 8 articles offline in case people want to read them, which I think is like fine and interesting, but like, I don't know, that's always held up as the number one use case, is a little like, who cares, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think there was no API in the past to like just get the title of those 8 documents so that you could build a UI that says, which one of these 8 articles would you like to read? I think you kind of needed to request the entire file to get it, which isn't particularly efficient, you know?
Right. No, and this would give you a way to get like a title and a thing, and a reference to the content, not just the.
Seems smart.
Like, yeah, but there's a whole bunch. There's their website, updates web, or Google developers.google.com/web/updates/capabilities. I can post a link in the show notes, but it's just a. You know, there's web share and all that, and those are launched, but they need to be updated and all that. So
there's some stuff that surprises me. It wasn't unclear about the release. They're like, oh, we have SVG icons now. I feel like if you ever have a sentence like that, or SVG favicons, you know, the thing that go in tabs, that sentence should always be accompanied by, it's a one liner. So show me how. Show me how you expect that to happen. Don't announce the feature with, like, anywhere that sentence is said, it should be accompanied by the one line of code that shows me how to do it. I feel like I had to dig around a little bit to figure out the expectation of it. And it wasn't unexpected. It's just rel icon, like, or whatever it is. I mean, I can't remember. I'm not looking at the exact code right now. But it's the same one that you would use if it was an ICO file or a PNG file. It's the same thing. It's just now it takes SVG2. And I feel like it's notably different because the only other browser I think Firefox is supporting it in that same way, but Safari supports it, but only with a different rel attribute. They only support like this mask icon way of doing it.
Right. And so I feel like that can only be monochrome. It can only have one color. Because the browser will fill that color. So
right, so it's more dark mode friendly and stuff.
Yeah, I guess. Well, that's the neat thing about SVG icons is you can do dark mode with them. So yeah. You can like internally, in your side, your SVG.
Right.
Yeah, you can program, to a color swappy thing. So that's pretty dang cool. I don't know, I'm curious like what people are gonna do with it. But these are also kind of.
I just feel like the opportunity is so clear. Like whoever coded that feature, you'd think they'd be highly incentivized to pair the marketing of that feature with a little snippet of best practices. Like,
yeah.
And why is that not ever done? Not ever. But
no. I'm like searching and I just get whatever. I don't get any like links for it. Nothing. Like in the first 20.
If I coded that feature, you'd better believe I'd want to tell people how to get the most out of it.
Yeah.
That feels weird. We're getting bogged in this again. Next episode is episode 400, and we have some browser people on to talk browser. So maybe we should just wait for that one to talk. And it's talk browsers about like more like just like, what are you actually working on? You know, it's funny about this list that we've been going down through, and there might be a few more things, so I don't mean to cut you off. You have some more interesting ones to talk about. Let's do it. But they are, first, the type of developers who care about these particular features, it's all over the map, which I think is kind of cool, maybe not that much for CSS people this time, a little bit of like overflow wrap stuff that's a little over my head, even though I've attempted to dig into that in my past. It's just the text wrapping is the most complicated thing in CSS, I feel like, some days. And nothing ever for HTML. Like, that's kind of the joke at this point. If you read a browser release notes, there's not going to be anything about HTML in there. Never. Nope.
No.
And we're curious about that. That conversation is heating up a little bit. Like, why not, And I don't think browsers are ignoring it. It's just the story is more complex and lower. It's perhaps our lowest level language on the web, so it makes sense that it evolves a little slower, perhaps,
Yeah, Jeremy Keith has a great talk out right now about building, but he showed this in previous talks, but just the concentric circles of velocity. I forget what the name of them are, but HTML, it moves slow, and then you go out a circle, CSS moves a little bit faster, and then you go out to the final circle, and JavaScript just squiggledy's wiggledy. It moves so fast that like keeping up with it is exhausting and you'll burn out. So in my experience, but.
Well, we'll get some stuff. Things are speeding up to some degree. We got, there was some hot news yesterday as I record, and you're probably listening to this about 5 days after the news about the the likely compromise ridden future of element queries or container queries.
Yeah. Very exciting. Brian Cardell wrote on his blog kind of a proposal, or like a, you know, softball word prototype, we'll say, about putting like select inside CSS, almost like calc works. So like it would be a value sort of thing. So you'd have like grid select, and then this new thing called like available in inline size or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
it was like, a switch. The actual function was switch, right? Like they're like guards in Rails or something.
I said select. I meant switch. Yeah, switch.
So it means like it's like if this, then this value. If this, this. Or it's literally a switch statement in JavaScript, right? Like if this condition matches, then the value is this. Or if this condition matches, the value is this. And then there's even a default at the bottom. So really, quite literally, like a switch statement in JavaScript or any other language that has switch statements.
And I thought that was very cool because you could, you know, the progressive enhancement story is kind of there. You just write out the default, you know, you could have auto prefix or, you know, spit the default out for you or whatever. And then your switch statement comes after it and the browser is just going to ignore it. So that's awesome. I think this solves, you know, the example he had was like grid template columns. And then you like change the columns based on the available inline size, which was awesome. And I think that solves that, like the card sort of like when you make a card, a UI table view kind of thing where there's like a, and right. You drag it out and it goes into a card.
And like 95% of what you're doing is grid template columns changes.
Yeah.
Was your pushback like right away that like that's, but sometimes I'm changing like eight properties.
Yeah. So that's sort of the thing I want to like know more about. And maybe we can have Brian on to ask about that, but like what happened? Cause you know, the other example, like basic example is like where you have a calendar and it's just like a timeline, vertical timeline on mobile, and then you stretch out and then boom, it's like a month calendar. Like how do you do that with like a bunch of switch statements or, you know, so and that I feel like would just get way too gnarly to have like 40 properties that just switch. But maybe, you know, like, again, I don't want to, just cause it doesn't do what I want right now. Like I would love the switch statement even just for layouts. Cause again, this is not based on the viewport. This is based on the element. So like, that's huge, right? Like, that's huge.
You know what I bet though? I bet this is so hot. It's the hottest thing in CSS. People want it so bad. And there's all kinds of different, CSS pre-processing languages. You know, we have all the classics like Sass and Stylus and Less and stuff. There's no reason in any of those languages you couldn't write a mix in that basically did this, and certainly post CSS is up for the job. Imagine just writing an element query, like, you know, a syntax that we've been talking about all along that looked a lot more like a media query, and in that block was you change eight properties in it. I think CSS pre-processing is capable of digesting that block and turning it all into switch statements for all those properties.
Go sprinkle it through.
Just sprinkle it through. Yeah. Like, and then it will compress really cleanly. It'll be really repetitive, but that's okay in CSS because it's gzipped anyway kind of thing. That's okay. It feels nice that somehow in my mind, I'm like, what's the difference? Why can't you write a media query that uses available inline size then? You know, like what about the syntax of putting it at the property level makes it fast? But I totally trust everybody in this conversation. I have no idea. I have no idea how CSS parsing works and how browsers do and stuff. It's just that the kind of the agreed upon thing was if there's a container query that really turns on its head the way browser rendering works, and that it turns this, you know, one pass job into a multiple pass job and stuff that I just don't understand, but do believe, you know, they're like, okay, that's just too hard. Okay. And then all of a sudden this syntax comes along, solves a good chunk of the use cases, and for some reason doesn't have that same problem. Great. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is just Brian's post on it. He also says, hey, there's David Barron over at Mozilla. He's working on a totally different idea, but with the same vibe, like the vibe of doability instead of not doability.
Right.
So who knows? Because this is years away from happening at all. So don't look at Brian's post and be like, well, that's the new syntax. Get used to it. You know, like it, some other thing could still win or whatever.
Well, and I think Brian's proposal has value, even if it's not the ultimate container query solution. Like it does have value, you know, like having a switch statement in CSS seems pretty darn cool, you know, like,
yeah, it does.
Like, I don't know if color black, you know, or background black, make my text white or something like that, you know, like think about that, you know, like I'm not saying like, I just, there's a lot of potential there. And I think like, it would be cool if we had that sort of stuff. That said, you know, the browsers are very concerned with any sort of like cyclical or I guess, yes, cyclical style calculation, because rendering it, like to build up to a render frame is kind of expensive. And especially if you're looking at these 120 hertz iPads or, you know, I just saw a 360 hertz monitor gaming display, you know, like these things are coming out. And so like, if the web wants to trail the hardware, like we're going to have to speed up our rendering. And so how do we do that? You know, I it'll be very curious, you know, how we'll do all of our layout calcs.
It's kind of incredible like how fast the web, you know, when you think about what happens in the like 1 second a website is rendering, it's like, it's reading an extraordinary amount of plain text code, interpreting all of it and getting it rendered to an interactive screen super fast.
Have you ever turned on the show paint or show style? What is it called in Chrome?
Is there some kind of like it teaches you what it's
rendering
doing?
Yeah, let's see. So you go into your Chrome dev tools and then there's the little... the little thing, the little hamburger shish kebab menu, and you go to more tools, right? And then you go to rendering, right? And then you do show paint flashing, right? Mm-hmm. So that shows you when something on your site got repainted. And I was doing this for the Shop Talk site that we're working on and should be out very soon, hopefully, fingers crossed. We have the podcast player in there and, you know, I was updating the time every second, like whenever it updates or I get an event that says it updates. And it was interesting because I was like, how is this, you know, performing is this, or like, is this, you know, cause it has to update the like scroll bar and the number, the progress, you know, it has to update that every second. And so I turned it on and I just was watching it. It was just like, okay, yeah. So it just only affects these two things. It doesn't re-render the whole entire friggin' web component every second. It'll just render the time, text, and the progress bar. So that was pretty efficient, I thought. I mean, as efficient as I can get, maybe.
Yeah. So. And that, you know, we're having more and more influence over that too. There was a good Rachel Andrew article on Smashing Magazine about the contain property, which gives, you know, authoring control over what we're even like allowing the browser to repaint. And it's not just painting, it's other steps of that rendering process as well, it sounds like. And very interesting, very low level control over stuff like that. And it's kind of like, you know, should I ever have to bother with this? Well, no, I don't think you always do. But if you are interested in eking out higher performance or having performance problems, that, you know, the tools are starting to be available to handle that, which is rad.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I mean, I just went through a whole, redesign of my site. And man, like there's so many things you can do just to squeak out a little performance or not use something and use something else instead. So I flipped a whole bunch to grid and I probably halved my CSS, you know, like, it's like, there's a lot that you can do to like squeeze out some performance. And yeah, now we're getting into like, oh, you can control the paint of your thing or like use all this Houdini stuff. And I'm sure we'll learn about that at some point, but yeah.
This episode is brought to you by An Event Apart. If you're a regular Shop Talk Show listener, I'm sure you're familiar with An Event Apart. Dave and Chris talk about it a lot. In case you're not, it's one of the premier web design conferences for UX and front-end experts like you. You get 3 days of design, code, and content for interaction designers and developers, packed with tips, techniques, and insights into the future from industry shakers and shapers. I think Dave is a shaper and Chris is a shaker.
I stayed up for about 2 hours figuring out how I fight an alligator in real life.
That's genius.
But you'll come away inspired and raring to return to work, either way. Their next event is in Washington, D.C. in April, and then they head to Seattle in May, Boston in June, Minneapolis in August, Orlando in October, and San Francisco in December. ShopDoc Show's own Dave Rupert is going to be speaking at the event in Seattle, so definitely check that one out if you're going to be in the area. An Event Apart event is a great opportunity to learn what's next. They don't just present what's happening now, they also look ahead to what's around the corner. You'll have an opportunity to learn from your peers. The attendees and speakers are dedicated professionals with experience and know-how from years in the field. And you'll also get immediate takeaways. They emphasize to their speakers that while inspiration and insights for the future are great, what every talk needs to have is tips and techniques you can take back to your desk right now. And if you need some help convincing your boss or your team to go to an Event Apart event, they've got a whole page full of tips and tricks to get your team out there and ways to convince your boss to say yes to going. So check out aneventapart.com for details, pricing, tickets, and all the full schedule and availability for each event that they've got coming up in 2020. Our thanks to An Event Apart for sponsoring this episode of Shop Talk Show.
Yeah, well, while we're on the news stuff, it's been interesting. You know, that's kind of where I was going with the drama stuff. I'd say this is light on drama, but it's just been, you know, Dave and I have both been involved recently. I think it started with, well, backstory. There's a thing called CSS3. Even last time I saw Dave, we were in San Francisco, maybe, and I remember being at a bar, and we were like standing around in a circle, and we were trying to remember what CSS3 even was. It's been so long ago that you're like, oh, were gradients? Was gradients one of them? That's so weird.
Nth child, WebKit, linear gradient, WebKit transition, and WebKit animation. I think those are all CSS.
Yeah, even border radius maybe and box shadow. I don't know. It's been a while. So it was funny just because it's like, wow, that was like the hottest thing in the world not so long ago. And now we're just like, what was that again? And the kind of the party line for a long time after that was that, you know, don't assume that the existence of CSS3 means that there's intrinsically an CSS4. And people were tried to be pretty clear about that while it was happening and after it was happening. Lots of people really trying to explain there is no CSS4. It doesn't make sense anymore. This was a one-time deal where we bumped up the version of all these specs. It was a very concerted effort to do this. But the reason there's no CSS4 is because on purpose, we were breaking apart the specs so that they could evolve independently without needing a CSS4. The independent evolution of specs was the point, in a way. And now, all these years later, with some look behind, we're like, wow, you know what was so successful in CSS? Calling it CSS3.
Yeah, it had a logo and everything.
Freaking huge. It had a logo. Everybody knew what it was. HTML5, even arguably more successful. So, because that HTML5 kind of encompassed
CSS3. Yeah, I mean, H5BP, yeah. Man. HTML5 boilerplate. Yeah, so 2011, Hixie said no HTML6. Hixie was? Does Hixie maintain?
He's still pretty involved.
HTML yeah, again? Still? Okay. I know like they like spun down what they do in HTML, I think. So Hixie said there will be no future snap or like there will be no HTML6. Like we'll have snapshots, these things we kind of talked about, I think a couple of weeks ago or but there'll be no HTML6. And then 2013, Tab Atkins was kind of broke the news that there will be no CSS4 and sort of trailing HTML. Like we're just like that was, we don't want to do that again. So I, you know, to each their own, that was like probably the best call at that point. Like it was causing
this
a lot
like
of
circa
like
circa 2012 too. I mean, this is like ancient history to a lot of you listening to this.
Oh, I mean, I would be curious when people started making or like got into the industry here, like the average listener. Cause I mean, this is pretty old stuff, 7, 8, 9 years ago. So
Sure. So, and that's the history of it. But just recently, there's been a, you know, let's think about how good CSS3 was for the web. And it wasn't just a successful marketing effort and that people knew what its name was. It had farther reaching implications than that. It had universities being like, well, we should update our curriculum for that because clearly that's important. It had website owners being like, well, maybe it's time to get on board with this new stuff. It had a lot of people making money, conferences, books, online courses. It had that going on, which was helping education. There was a lot of good that came out of it. So why not just give it another shot again? And there's been mostly, I'd say, enthusiasm for it. To some degree, it started with PPK's post that said, here, why don't we just do it? And it was very open-ended post, like, let's just think about it. What's the possibilities of it? I wrote a response to it saying, like, I don't know, maybe, you know, like, I'm interested in at least thinking about it and thinking about just as a thought exercise alone, even if it doesn't go anywhere, what would we put in that bucket? Because the bucket is, like, almost, like, too big. Because it's been so long since CSS4, that's like you kind of got to pick some stuff and exclude some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's, you know, like, can we actually pull this off? Who's spearheading it? Is the working group people involved or are they not involved? Whatever. And of course, they're involved. You know, like, yeah, I mean, that's, if it's going to work, it's got to involve those people. And they already do this kind of snapshot thing. Now I feel like I'm rambling a little bit, but there's, you know, JavaScript does this already with their versions. I think everybody's aware of that, right?
Yep. They have like an annual publication and they have stages of features too. So like, and this is where CSS and JavaScript are pretty different. Like there's stage 1 through 4 or something in ECMAScript. And so stage 4 is like, don't do basically, right? Like, or is it the other way? But it's basically like, this is fresh green technology, just an idea. Stage 2, 3, I could be flipping the order here, but stage 3 would be like, there's an implementation, proceed at your own risk. Stage 2 is like getting close. Stage 1 is like, you're probably safe to put in your projects. Stage 0 is ready for candidacy. Like, and so it goes into the spec and it rolls up into that year. So like every year you have like features graduating into existence. And, you know, I feel like, man, it would be great. Like that seems like a successful model. I wish CSS and HTML had it. So we could kind of say like, okay, this feature would be super cool if it existed, like if it graduates. And we could kind of see like almost like a Kanban board of features, you know, like, oh, okay. So this one's almost out, like it's ready to go. So,
been some pushback on this too. When I posted, Louis Lazarus responded with like, no, this is really like, it's not going to work and it's not necessary anyway, because the breaking out of the specs was the point and stuff. And he had some points in there. There's now a like thread on the, you know, the working group's GitHub thing, kicked off, I think, by Jen, but you know, it feels like anybody who's anybody has chimed in on this thing. Mostly positive, I'd say, but a notable voice of dissent was Rachel Andrew herself saying that I don't think this is the right move for it too. So it's not, you know, drama's not the right word, but it's not like unanimous consensual, you know, that this is a good idea. But I'd say there's a lot more positivity than anti, you know, and not a lot of like, okay, if we all agree, then what? I mean, I hate to make this about me, but that was my first take is like, let's say we agree on what it is and what the name is, then what? What is that, you know, how do you get anybody to care is, you know, I'd almost start with that.
I mean, no. And I mean, you know, it's worth, I think Rachel's thoughts there is sort of like, it's maybe like builds FOMO, sort of like, ugh, it updated again. I just was learning the old thing and it updated.
Yeah.
Like, which is totally valid. Like, that's how I feel about
JavaScript. Well, and Jen's is, I think, not to make this more dramatic, but almost a stronger point in that, let's say you want to learn, you're really on your own without some kind of checklist or some kind of, you know, guidance of this is the bucket of things in which to, once you've learned it, kind of feel satisfied that you're up to date on this stuff. How would you have any idea if your update on CSS stuff now. I mean, I run a CSS blog. I spend my life's work is trying to understand CSS, and I don't know what I would tell you. I don't know how I would give you a ribbon saying that you're kind of caught up on knowing about CSS. It's a wild west out there. There's a lot to learn. It's very random. You know, I feel like I don't know, just keep up style learning, that, as Jen kind of put it, is a valid, like, kind of concern about learning CSS. You don't know. Whereas CSS 3 was like, here's the list. That's the stuff that's in here. If you know all that stuff, I'd say you're boned up on CSS 3, you know?
Hey, this episode is sponsored by WordPress.com, another new feature to tell you about of WordPress.com that's pretty cool, that will appeal to people trying to make money online, is your WordPress.com site can make you money. You know, it can do that in a number of ways. For one thing, you can enable ads on them and make money through advertising. You can have the e-commerce plan, which is, you know, kind of has WooCommerce then baked into it, and you can sell stuff. So that's kind of rad, you know, if you have something to sell in the world. But here's another thing you can do, and this is the new one, is that you can do recurring payments as well. So if you wanted to, like, have a subscription or some kind of anything that you want to pay, have your customers pay you monthly or yearly for annually, you can do that now. So that's pretty cool. You need to use Stripe. So you can just sign up for a Stripe account. It's the kind of the nicest payment gateway thing out there anyway. So you might already have a Stripe account, you know, whatever. And then you connect WordPress.com to Stripe, and then you're all set up to do this. So as you're creating content on your WordPress.com site, pages, posts, all that stuff, you know, you have the Calypso editor in there, you know, like the Gutenberg-esque thing where you're making blocks and stuff. One of the buttons will just be a recurring payment button. You can just say, like, this button signs my customers up for a $12 a month subscription to my site, you know? And this is good. This is a good way to, if you have something valuable to offer, to get a, you know, consistent base of customers to build your business from. So if you have ideas for that and don't feel like coding it from scratch and building it and all that, you can use WordPress.com, which is a nice fit because that's kind of what it's for anyway. You know, it's like, for people that don't necessarily want to code up their own site, but still have all the power of a big, awesome CMS that they don't have to worry about. Now, same thing, you have e-commerce that you don't have to worry about and get wired up yourself. It's a pretty cool feature. Check it out.
I do want to correct my statement.
Yep.
The TC39.es process document. Zero is the straw person, no implementation of Ankind. One is proposal, and that's where, like, there's polyfills or demos. Two is the draft, which is experimental.
Oh, three, it was reverse of, like, what you said.
The reverse of what it, three is a candidate for, it's like spec compliant to every, you know, the I's and T's are crossed and dotted.
Right.
And then four is finished, and that's shipping in a browser. So that's
okay.
Or like shipping in, I guess.
Well, this was very relevant to what Rachel was saying too, is that you can't, like, just because the specs are in a certain spot doesn't represent necessarily the usability of something. And you can't speak broadly about the usability of something because everybody's project has different browser support requirements. So she's just being like that. It doesn't paint a picture very kindly of how and when to start using these things, because you might just be like, oh, well, it's in CSS 4 or it's in CSS 2020. So I'm using it, you know, that kind of, I don't know, it steamrolls the idea of like, okay, no, what exactly, what browsers is this in, and how does that map to my project and what it's and what our support targets are?
Right. Just because it's like got a green check mark on it, like, doesn't mean it's good for you or your business. You know,
right.
That's, you know,
the danger being if you reach for something a little too new and it's not part of your browser support chart thing, that you feel like you could be misled by somebody that really shouldn't be misleading you, the working group, you know?
Yeah, because you're like, oh, SubGrid has a green check mark on CSS 2020. It's 2020. I'm going to use SubGrid.
I was playing with it yesterday. I thought I had a pretty good case of where I thought a SubGrid could be useful to me, you know? And I, you know, slap me on the wrist if you want, but I like and use Firefox sometimes, but it's not my full-time browser. But I was using it yesterday because I had a subgrid thing I wanted to work on. And then eventually I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do this yet. The way I was using it didn't have a particularly nice fallback. Subgrid can have really nice fallbacks, but I was using it primarily to do one thing. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do it because...
Yeah. I had it on my site because I moved like my projects up to next to my posts and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, maybe those could be in the same grid because they're different. Maybe I could display contents it to get it in the grid or something. But I, you know, didn't do that. But I was like, oh, maybe this would be a perfect thing for subgrid. But I just ended up like faking a grid and, you know, emulating the parts of the grid I was using, I guess. So, but yeah, it was one of those situations where like, oh man, if I had subgrid everywhere, this would be super, super sweet, you know? Well.
Yeah. So we'll see if this goes anywhere. The thread is really heating up. I mean, as we're talking today, that thread is popping with people's opinions.
Two like standards threads right now. It is so much stuff. Man, like 19 comments in one and 31 comments in another. That one's about declarative shadow DOM. Oh yeah. Boy, you know, which is cool, but like, oh boy.
I know you stepped in it because somebody's like, well, what about this? This would solve, because Dave's been hot on HTML imports for what, forever, you know? And this is years, kind yeah. of like a little, you know, it's a compromisey step towards it, just like these. Container queries is a compromise. What a week in web development, though. My gosh, we're kind of getting everything we want in 1 week, but with little handcuffs on it. But, you know, still, we're getting it. You
know. No, it's just like we got all the, like, you know, at least some server-side rendering story for web components, which is the declarative shadow DOM, a possibility of CSS4. Oh, my gosh. You know, and then this, you know, I don't know, man. I think we're getting close. And then even I can give a follow-up as the like accordion and all that stuff that I want in HTML. I wrote a blog post in December and punched the web standards business. There's a group called OpenUI, and it's kind of spearheaded by the folks at Microsoft. And it's sort of just like a they're trying to collect information about design systems openly and see what's in all these components that are all have this different names and blah, blah. Like, so they're basically trying to catalog design systems in the open. So if you maintain the design system, it might be cool to add yours to that, but but it's basically like the goal I think is to try to make a blueprint for like what a accordion component could look like. And then once we have a blueprint, we can make tests or whatever. And those tests can either inform your design system or it can inform a spec. It can inform a web component. It can inform a new element. Like there's a lot of possibility there. Like, you know, if we have these blueprints, you know, so you could at least say like, oh, this accordion from this random library, is it open web compatible to that spec or that like sort of pseudo spec? That would be awesome to know. So stuff like that. So we're checking out. So I don't think it solves my issue. I still think we need an accordion in tabs, like just put it, just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Every site has them, but whatever. Maybe we're getting close.
It sounds like even that stuff though is kind of, it's at least it's not being forgotten. It's being talked about and researched and thought about and stuff. So in a way we're getting, you know, there's at least baby steps towards every one of our desires for the web. Pretty incredible.
Yeah, no, I think we're, it's, you know, I think the question that I left last year and kind of want to explore this year through this podcast and through my own writing and whatever is sort of like, what's the future of HTML and CSS? Like what's going on? Because there's also stuff, you know, like I have a tweet bookmarked here from Alex Russell that's just like HTML is dead basically. I'm misrepresenting it, but it's basically just like the like HTML is like it's very hard to put to get any movement there because there's so much consensus and stuff like that that's required, and I think Alex is exact quote is, HTML may be a dead language because those who claim to love it can't imagine it being better. And that's only to say, like, I think his argument there is, you know, new proposals get like, whoa, every time. So I think that's a really sort of harsh position, but I think the nugget of truth there is, like, it's hard to make HTML stuff because it requires so much consensus. So
yeah, you know, it's all complicated by the idea that this feels hoity-toity to say, but like programming paradigms kind of have shifted to some degree. There's a post today, which of course I'll defend because it's on CSS Tricks. I published it from a guest offer, Mike Turley, that has a, you know, possibly inflammatory title too. Why JavaScript is eating HTML, which seems like you're gonna, you know, not that some kind of HTML people are gonna immediately be like,
ah! I hate clicked it. I'll be honest, I hate clicked it.
You can hate click it. And yeah. I think it kind of spells out a pretty fair situation, starting with, you know, what HTML is good at and what CSS is good at, and the kind of established historical patterns of how we used these technologies to build things, layering on technology, which feels pretty fair to me. And then as he goes down, he's like, well, let's just do the to-do list thing or the grocery shopping list thing and think about how we keep those the HTML concerns, CSS concerns, and JavaScript concerns separately as we build this thing out, and builds out a pretty fair MVP of what a shopping list is like. And then gets to the point and is like, but just think about how complex it all is. Like, because we on purpose broken it apart into those three languages, it adds a bunch of complication that is just a kind of a different programming paradigm. And if you approached it a different way and kind of smashed a little bit more of it into JavaScript, that some of the like complexity falls away. It becomes like a different style of programming that you know, at least appeals to different types of people and could arguably be quote unquote simpler and easier to manage. And I don't know, you know, it's just stuff to think about. You know, I published it because I, you know, I'm not going to say I agree with every word here, but I, you know, as someone who does use modern JavaScript frameworks fairly often for these reasons, I kind of buy it.
Yeah, you know, I had my rebuttal written before I finished the first paragraph on why this is wrong. And but no, I think, you know, I think it spells it out very nicely. I mean, it sort of exemplifies the trend in web development since, you know, HTML5, like 2011, you know, like with Backbone and sort of these, you know, I think, you know, we sort of started putting pieces of our UIs to make them dynamic and refresh and fetching from JSON and stuff like that. We started pulling piece. And then eventually you have so many pieces in both places, the HTML and the JavaScript. It just is like, well, I'm just going to not do the HTML part because I know I need the JavaScript part. And that's so, like the tip the scales, you know. So I think it's, you know, I think it was a pretty good article overall. I'll say that. So
if you're in the, like, you know, forget that HTML is less important to evolve, you know, it might be half because you're like, well, it's hard to evolve because standards and it's a low level language and there's not a lot of support and we get blocked right and left, you know. The of course, the thing that everybody holds up is the Toast thing. Like, you know, we tried to do really good on Toast and we got, you know, machine gunned on that thing. And by we, I mean Chrome, essentially, you know. And so, like, that doesn't bode well for anybody else trying anything else. Because what, are we just going to get machine gunned again? Why bother, you know? Which is maybe not fair, but...
No, I mean, I think that's fair. And I think you have, you know, like, I think that was probably a negative experience for a lot of Chrome developers. And, you know, and I apologize if I piled on, I did make some jokes, but really, like, I'm curious about this model where, you know, web components are delivered, you know, natively. You know, I think that was for me too. It wasn't just like, here's a web component. It was like, here's a web component and we're putting it in the browser natively and it's shipping next week, you know, like, or it was intent to implement, which is the now called intent to prototype, which is a much better name. But it was they were like, it's going out in the next version of Chrome and in some form or fashion behind a flag or origin trial or something. I think that was a lot of things happening all at once, and people sort of, you know, standardistas, we'll call them, or istos, sort of pumped the brakes and just were like, hey, this is a lot of action. It looks like you're just sort of going to ship things in whatever AMP wants in Chrome or whatever. Like, you're just going to start putting things in the browser, like HTML. And what if Mozilla doesn't want to do this? What do we do? You know, like, there wasn't exactly a plan committed for, like, what happens then. So, all's to say,
it's hard to follow. Isn't I would it? Love Even if you're a trying redo. To follow it.
I would love a redo, and I'd love, like, each piece to be talked about or discussed or each piece sort of identified. Like, I think they fixed the intent to prototype thing. Like, intent to prototype is a great way to say, like, hey, don't worry, we are going to put this in the browser, but it's just for looking at purposes only. I think that solves so many problems. I think we should look at this native.
That's what an origin trial is, isn't it? Let's make it one of those thingies.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's Chrome only, so it'd be nicer if there was some Firefox version of that. But I guess that's on Firefox to do, you know?
Well, and yeah. But I think that's where the second part is, that standard system of web components, like a native library of web components. How cool would that be? Also, if it's just written in JavaScript, all Mozilla has to do is steal that JavaScript file and then, like, spit out and build a mechanism to import web components into there. Like, and that's easier said than done, but, you know, like, in theory, it can be done. And then step three would be, like, you know, does the UX and all this stuff match, or what should it be named and stuff like that? I mean, like, I just wish that was, you know, I don't know. I wish that was sort of better. I wish we could have a redo on it, but I don't know that we're going to have a redo. It sounds like Chrome has a fixed mindset about this, and they're very close to even attempting that again. It'd be very cool if they tried it again, but who knows?
So. Well, don't browsers have a way of forcing each other to do things? There was, you know, this one was surprising to me today. I was so excited and continue to be excited about the presence of a loading attribute for images and iframes. And I don't know, I think that maybe just those two at first, but perhaps there's other elements, video, maybe, I don't know, that is loading lazy. You put loading lazy on it and it does fancy heuristics and stuff and doesn't load the dang image until you're scrolled enough close to it. Now, there's a lot of nuance here. I'm going to skip all that. But the point is, it works. It's native. It's easy. It has huge impact on the performance of the web. Huge fan, clap, 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 way to be. I did not realize that it was just this week where it was accepted into the HTML spec at all. So let's imagine a world in which that it wasn't accepted, or there was problems with it, or we're going to change the name or something. It's shipped. It's in stable Chrome now. Everybody's doing it. There's a WordPress plugin for it. I've been using it forever. Now, all of a sudden, I have like isn't that, I always thought, you know, and I could be wrong in my thinking about that that's really worrisome. That's just browsers going rogue and shipping stuff. And the danger is that if everybody starts doing that, it happens while we have this really busted up web where you have to do all kinds of different crap for all kinds of different browsers. And the extreme of that is very bad for the web. Isn't this that? Is this that?
Well, yeah, I want to say there was maybe a bit more consensus building on that, you know, like, you know, and it wasn't out of nowhere, I guess I should say, you know, like Addy Asmani has been giving talks, and I think it, you know, it was very much raised in open channels and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, so it's not that, you know, I just want to be careful. Well, I don't really get it all.
You know? No, you make a good point. Like, it wasn't in the spec, and it's used. I think it's something like 18 million times or something. Did you see that report? Like a lazy load usage?
Oh, it's darn popular. Oh,
it's 18 X growth and since it came out or something like that, or 1800X growth. Let's see. Loading lazy. You can't Google anything that somebody tweeted because it's like, anyway. Anyway, you can't, there's no way to group.
It's Google, popular. Anyway, I got
it's, it. It's like in massive production, and I'm using it on my site, and like, man, it's because the beauty of it is like, it's no penalty. Like in with Jen Simmons kind of idea to like provide an aspect ratio using the height and width. Now we use height and width again. That's an update.
Incredible. Incredible. Like, soak that in. If you missed that, rewind, people. Put height and width attributes on your images. It also has similarly very powerful perceived performance loading benefits for nothing.
Yeah, it draws the box and then loading lazy is like, go get it whenever you determine, browser. Like, yeah. Like don't actually, please don't load it right now. I mean, it's so fast and like it just can kind of like, and I like it as an author because I can kind of describe what images I think are critical and what images can just be like load whenever. You know, for my website, it's like, oh, the feet, my logo and my little dude, my news hammer dude, that has to be, that's critical. That has to show up first. Like that. Mm-hmm. I know those show up first. But the like side projects, whenever.
Yeah. Man,
just like whenever you got free time, load those in, but I'll draw the little box. I want there to be a little box there. So the browser doesn't like hiccup and barf and stuff like that. And you could test that. You could draw like, do image background CCC or something. So it like you, so you'll see gray boxes get filled in or something. I don't think you ship that in production every time, but like that would be a good way for you to know, like something's going to fill in this box. Mm. Like, so pretty cool, world.
Well, we've managed to make this the browser show this year. I mean, we have to, because this is a show about front-end development. And so no apologies, I guess. That's, the stuff matters to our jobs in a big way.
And I think it just is sort of like, I think it's the time. And I think it's sort of like, you know, we're, it's, there's some good things coming up, especially this week. But then I think like figuring out what's going to happen for HTML and CSS is good. And then, you know, right after that, there's going to be a whole thing for like JavaScript frameworks. Like, you know, I think like, you know, Vue 3 is coming out, a few new paradigms in Vue 3, TypeScripty sort of stuff. And then, you know, you got React with Suspense or what? React? No, Suspense is there, or it's not in main. I forget. But, you know, React has a whole bunch of stuff coming out or going in and being built. So there's a lot of stuff going on. So interesting time. So
it really I is.
Think we'll wrap.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good time to be a web developer. Darn it. So, all right, we should wrap it up then. Thank you, dear listener, for listening to this in your podcast of choice. Be sure to star heart favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. If you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you, just like this company.
Hey, Shop Talk Show folks. There's always jobs available for you to check out at the Shop Talk Show job board, just at our website /jobs, you know, link to it in the header, of course. Here's a special one I want to tell you about, though. They're looking for a senior front-end developer at Scorpion. It's an internet marketing and design company in Santa Clarita, California, which is an absolutely beautiful place, kind of northwest of Los Angeles. Here's some quick facts about it, just because I happen to be looking at a map. Santa Clarita is a California city north of Los Angeles, known for Six Flags Magic Mountain theme park. What else does it say? The prehistoric stone formations of Vasquez Rocks Natural Area Park have served as a backdrop for many films. Oh, I love that. The pictures of it are gorgeous here. So what if, don't you want to like live in California and be a senior front-end developer at Scorpion? Sounds like a nice life, doesn't it? They're looking for, you know, it's a senior job. So, you know, 4+ years of JavaScript. They mention React and JSX. They also mention, you know, in italic here, must be proficient in programming with Angular 2. So bone up on your Angular 2 stuff out there. Maybe you already know it. And apply for this job. Change your life. Could be good. You know, you're going to roll into a marketing agency kind of thing. You know, you're going to be working on a team, working with project managers and product designers and fellow engineers. And you're making cool stuff for users. You know, you should be organized. You should have an adaptable workflow. You should be detail-oriented, all that kind of stuff. They're saying, you know, if you want to, you know, some extra check marks on the application here, Jasmine's a good one to know. Testing, of course. You know, looks like they mentioned testing a couple of times here. They must take that seriously. The Ionic framework is a plus, you know, that big deal framework that kind of makes apps work on multiple platforms, which is pretty cool. They even list the salary stuff. It's 130 to 180K. So pretty solid, you know, yearly pay there. Pretty good, if you ask me. And of course, it's loaded with benefits and all that stuff. So again, it's Scorpion. They're looking for a senior front-end developer in Santa Clarita, California.
And Chris, you got anything else you'd like to see?
Chop.show.com.